Diabetes Revolution podcast with Dr. Sarah Townley, the type 2 diabetes coach, clinical pharmacist, and mom of six angels. You don't have to struggle and fight with your blood sugars for the rest of your life. I'm here to teach you the skills you need to control and even reverse this disease. There is such a thing as getting off your meds and creating a future free from diabetes, and you can have it too. Let's get down to business. Hello, my dear friends. I'm back today with another podcast episode for you, and it's on a topic that I love to talk about. I can talk and talk and talk about fasting. I love it. I do it. I'm doing it right now. And I have so much to say about it that I thought I would create a separate episode for you all about the practical tools of how to start fasting and how you want to integrate it into your day-to-day or week-to-week life. If you haven't listened to the first of these two, the two parts episode, I want you to go back to the last episode and find the one that says why fasting works, especially if you have doubts or fears about the usefulness or the science behind why fasting is a powerful therapeutic practice that has immense healing benefits. There's no question that fasting has the ability, something this simple, something this available to us, has the ability to heal type 2 diabetes, obesity, autoimmune diseases, gut diseases, cancer, even like neurological diseases like epilepsy and Alzheimer's. There are many, many different chronic disease states that respond beautifully to, you know, just intermittent fasting or periods of time where you remain in a fasted state. Why? Because when you are not feeding yourself, and eating is a stress on the body, it is a huge energy demand and requires a lot of actions for your body to break it down and assimilate it. When you're not doing that and tasking your body with that constantly, your body is able to shift and move into a healing mode. This is a magical thing that if you have not experienced it, I want you to go back and listen to the first episode of this two-part series so that you can familiarize yourself with the science behind why fasting is something you might want to consider, especially if you're having a difficult time controlling your blood sugars and you know you're moving in the wrong direction. Hands down, fasting is the most powerful tool available to us to manipulate our insulin levels, to get our insulin levels low. And why this is so important is that diseases like type 2 diabetes and obesity develop in a state of high insulin levels because insulin is a hormone that signals to your body to store fat. And when it's chronically high, you not only gain weight, but you develop insulin resistance. This episode is all about how to fast. Okay. We like all that intellectual, geeky science, but we also want to know, how do I put this information into motion? How do I actually just do it, right? And I want to tell you that right now, I am still learning in my life. I just started reading a book the other day. It's actually a book you could read in a day if you had some time on your hands. That was new to me. It's endorsed by Dr. Fung, which I think is important because I am sort of a disciple of Dr. Jason Fung. I followed him for years. He's literally changed my life. And he wrote the book, The Complete Guide to Fasting, which I highly recommend. But this other book that I got my hands on, it's not available on Amazon, by the way, but I'll link to it in the notes, is called Beyond Fasting. And it's written by Dr. Daniel Pompa. And it talks about just not just the things I already knew about fasting, but some things I didn't know, which is always really interesting to me. So what I'm talking about specifically is he takes you through a 7-week process to fast for 5 days straight. Okay. And I've fasted for several days in a row, but never 5 days. I think my max is like 4 days. Anyhow, he talks about the hormonal and physiological changes that take place on day 4 that sets you up for a magical thing on day five. And he allows you to do this program with him where he walks you through a successful completion of a five-day fast, taking a person who's never fasted before all the way through this process. And he talks so much about the science. Half the book is, it's quite a large book, but half the book is recipes and just citations, scientific article citations, because he is very evidence-based. So what he introduces is this, to me, is this concept that when you are on day four of a fast, and he emphasizes water fast, but gives alternatives to that if you don't want to just drink water during your fast and still get benefits from the fast. What he does is he explains that on day four, you get this massive amount of autophagy. So in the last episode, I explained this, but autophagy literally translates to self-eating. You start to ramp up and supercharge your process of autophagy that's been going on for the last several days, but just really hits a high point on day four. And what's going on is your body is going into the cells and identifying the ones in your body that are not adapting to the fast, that aren't learning how to burn fat for fuel, that have damage or dysfunctional mitochondria, which are the energy producers of the cell. And it will eat those. It will discard them and consume them for its cellular components and for energy. And so on day four, you're seeing this massive amount of autophagy where you're cleaning out and getting rid of the less optimal or dysfunctional cells in your body, all over your body. And in day five, you see the replacement of those with new stem cells. So this is what's really fascinating, is that you can generate massive amounts of stem cells, which are like baby cells, brand new spanking cells that can do anything. And you see this healing process happen in the body. So for those of you whose pancreas could use some healing, this might intrigue you. Not that I think you have to do a five-day water fast, but it's just interesting, right? So for those of you who have multiple chronic diseases or past injuries or pain, you know, like pain because of degenerative disc disease or something like that, it might be really interesting to you to know that you can make new cells to replace the old ones that don't work well anymore and get some massive healing with day four and day five of a five-day fast. So I'm reading this book. I'm really enjoying it. I'm geeking out on all this new science that I've never heard about before, especially that stem cell stuff. And I'm rolling it around and I'm fasting right now. So I'm not that everybody needs to do this. I've been practicing fasting for years now, but I'm on day two. I'm playing around with some of the tools I'm going to teach you today of how to manage hunger while you're fasting and how to stay strong while you're fasting. And I'm thinking, hey, am I in the middle of a five-day fast? Maybe I am, you know, because the truth is after day three, your hunger pretty much disappears. If you can get through day two, which I'm almost done with, into day three, you might even start to see it show up then where your hunger really just goes away. For me today, I had one experience of hunger, and I want to teach you how to experience hunger and not break your fast in this podcast episode. All right, so because I think that's really what we're all afraid of, isn't it? I want to just make sure I mention the disclaimer that I'm not giving medical advice and that you should probably talk to your doctor, wink, wink, about employing a strategy of fasting if you are, especially if you're on medications, okay? I've heard a lot of people say, I can't fast, I get too shaky, too jittery, my blood sugar gets too low. And I would address that if you were my one-on-one client, like really dig into what does that even mean? Because I hear that said a lot and it isn't even actually accurate. Just the perceptions of what's happening and perceptions of what's too low of a blood sugar are oftentimes totally off base. But if you are on medications like insulin or pills that increase your insulin, like glipizide, glyburide, glimepiride, those kind of pills, you need to be very careful about fasting because it's so powerful. Literally, My clients who fast and are on these medications will see their insulin requirement drop rapidly. It is not a joke when I say that you could be seeing the need to reduce your insulin in 24 hours after you begin practicing low-carb lifestyle plus intermittent fasting. Okay, these are very powerful tools. Okay, so how do you begin? If you're interested in incorporating some intermittent fasting to your life, how do you start? So you want to start by narrowing your eating window. I talked about this on the last episode. I called it time-restricted eating, where you identify a time in your day, your 24-hour period of time in a day, and you identify the window that you consume food. You want to keep it smaller than it has been. You want to start to whittle away. So that looks like, for many people, if they've been eating from 6 or maybe 7 or 8 a.m., all the way till 7 o'clock at night, right? That's pretty common and typical, and even maybe even, you know, a little conservative for a lot of folks out there who eat a nighttime snack before bed. So if you've got that window, that's about an 11-hour, 12-hour window of time that you're in a fed state. What you want to do is shrink that by a couple hours. And the easiest way that my clients start is to delay their breakfast, because many of us are not hungry when we wake up in the morning, okay? So if you can push your 7 a.m. breakfast to 9 a.m. or your 8 a.m. breakfast to 10 a.m., you've just whittled off 2 hours of your eating window, and now you have a 10-hour eating window. That's an improvement. And for a lot of you, that's a big step, you know? They might feel very awkward or difficult in the beginning to do this. So if you're already at an 8-hour eating window, I want you to shrink that by a couple hours. And I want you to think about doing that and pay attention to your hunger, okay? The other tips that I want to give you when you begin, when you start working in more fasted hours into your day, is to avoid snacking. Okay, so many of us have been told that we need to eat multiple snacks between meals to keep our metabolism going or our blood sugar stable or whatever else the snack and food industry wants us to believe to buy their products. And I'm going to tell you that it's bad advice. If you can avoid snacking, I want you to do that. If you do snack, I want you to keep it low carb. Okay, like some nuts, a handful of nuts, you know, just something that is easy for you to grab and take with you and pass over if you don't eat it. You know, some people might have like a protein shake or something in their purse. Okay, while you're in a fasted state, it's important that you drink plenty of water. Why? Because when you're fasting, you lose more water. The reason is because your body lets go of it. It's going to start to empty out stored energy, especially glycogen. The first stored energy that your body will want to empty are your glycogen stores. This is what you're burning at night when you're sleeping. They're long molecules of glucose that are stored for when you're not eating. And glycogen is a big fluffy molecule. It's stored in your liver and in your muscle tissue. And when you start to burn through it, it lets go the water that is attached to it. And so when you're fasting, you will notice that you urinate more, that you let go of a lot of water. Your swelling might go down. Places that you retain water may disappear. Okay, so drink plenty of water while you're fasting. And then I want you to monitor your blood sugar. And I want you to break your fast if you're feeling lightheaded or you feel bad at all. Okay, you can always try again tomorrow. So those are the very first advice, you know, tips that I would give to a person who's just beginning. Now I want to talk about how to take it up a notch, okay? So it's very important that you are fat adapted before you go for longer fasts. What does that even mean? Fat adapted just means that your body is able to burn fat for fuel efficiently to meet the energy demands of your body. Most of us that live in the United States or other Western cultures have been sugar burners for years, for decades, where we're never tapping into our fat stores. We're almost always burning glucose for fuel to run all of our body's needs. And to be in a fat-burning state is unusual for most of, you know, the American population or the Canadian population or whatever. So if you know that you're a sugar burner, because you can tell you've been slowly gaining weight, right? If you've been developing insulin resistance, it's highly likely that you're a sugar burner. When you stop eating, your body needs a source of fuel. And if you are not eating, the source of fuel you want it to use is your body fat stores. But if your body has not acclimated or become accustomed to tapping into its fat stores and burning fat for fuel, it will have a difficult time. If you've ever heard of the keto flu, this is what this is. It's pulling the rug out from underneath your body. So I want to tell you a story that maybe you can relate to that I think illustrates what I'm talking about here. So years ago, I got invited by one of my pharmacist friends to run a trail race in the mountains, the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming. And I'd never run that far before. It was an 18-mile race, and there are many races offered that are way longer than that. This was the shortest race, but I'd never run that far, and I needed to train for this. And I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to lose this last 10 pounds. I'm going to get to do this trail race. It's going to be awesome. And so I went to work training for and completing this race. And what do you know? I didn't lose a single pound. I ran so many miles and I never lost any weight. Why? Because I was running off of sugar. I was feeding myself pre-run, during the run, post-run with sources of glucose, carbohydrates. You know, and some other things too, like protein and fat. But essentially, I was not teaching my body to go without sugar. And so after that race, I decided I had to face my food. And the truth is that your diet, your diet is 80% responsible for your weight. Many people get awesome results with exercise, but if you are trying to use exercise as your method of weight loss, more often than not, it's not going to work, okay? Because what you are eating is going to be controlling the hormones that decide whether you're going to lose weight or not. And if you're working out, many of us will make allowances or justify eating more, and sometimes our hunger just goes up because we're expending more energy. Okay, so I decided to deal with my diet after I didn't lose any weight with that race. And I decided to go low carb and intermittent fast at the same time, cold turkey. So one day I'm a sugar burner, I'm eating whatever like I'm normally eating. And then the next day, and I remember it so clearly, it was the 4th of July and I took my kids to a water park that day. I decided I wasn't having any food until noon and I was going to eat low carb. And I was at the water park and it was 11 o'clock and I started to get really, really hungry. I'm talking intense, urgent, overpowering hunger. It was very painful. And I did not have a lot of patience while experiencing that kind of hunger to deal with five kids that I needed to get out of the pool and into the car. I remember it just being really awful. And I love it that I have this experience because I understand now what it means to teach your body to burn fat and to become fat adapted before you start going long periods of time without eating, because I can teach my clients this now. So what needs to happen is that you teach your body to burn fat before you start to go long periods of time without food. Okay. And how do you do this? Well, one of the most effective ways is to stop feeding your body sources of glucose. And this doesn't mean you have to go ketogenic. It just means that you definitely need to cut out refined carbohydrates, which are sugar and flour or things made with sugar and flour. And begin by just eliminating those and sticking to a whole food diet that includes some complex carbohydrates like potatoes, you know, root vegetables or beans or fruit, so that your body can begin to learn to not use these huge loads of glucose for fuel and to store it constantly so that there's always a supply of glucose. When you do that, your body is able to tap into fat stores and start to develop the cellular machinery that is actually different and required in order to effectively burn fat from your body. And guess what? Your body has a lot of fat for a reason. We're supposed to use that stored energy for when we're not eating. And you know what else is? Your body fat is saturated fat. Just FYI. It's kind of interesting. Okay, so that's really important, and I wanted to make sure that I get that out there before I start talking about how to deal with like hunger when you're fasting. Because if your hunger is overpowering and extreme and very urgent, that's a sign that you have not taught your body to burn fat for fuel. So what other ways are there that you would know that you're becoming fat adapted, besides just your hunger being less, you know, less intense? Because that is what happens. It becomes more of like a annoying reminder when you're hungry and you're fat adapted, and it passes when you don't eat within 15 minutes typically. So another way to know is, are you losing weight? Are you eliminating any of your body fat? Another way, or the simplest way for you to know if you're fat adapted, is to check your ketones. So you can do this two different ways. There are urine strips that you can buy at the pharmacy, and you just pee on them, and they give you a color, a shade of a color, and you compare it to the legend on the side of the strip container, and it will tell you if you're in ketosis and is it mild, moderate, or high in quantity. It's not very specific, and it's not, you know, necessarily so dependable, but it is a very easy and cheap way to start checking for ketones. The second way that I recommend and I use in my life is to check blood ketones. And this is with a special meter. The one I have is called a Keto Mojo meter. Keto Mojo. And it will check your glucose and your ketones with two different strips, but the same meter. And it's pretty accurate. And it's really fun to be able to learn, you know, what gets me into ketosis? When am I in a fat burning state? And what things change that for me, right? Does exercise change that for me? Or does, you know, eating whatever you want to test change that for me? So, because if you eat too much protein, you can make enough glucose to shift from fat burning into sugar burning. And really the truth is that you don't need to be so religious necessarily about this, but it's just more information. It's more data. It's more reassurance that you're on the right track when you can see that your ketones are above 0.5 and that you're in ketosis. Okay, some other ways that you can know that you're becoming fat adapted is that your cravings disappear and you don't really need to snack between meals. Like, you're not hungry enough to require snacks between meals. You also might notice when you're fat adapted that your energy and the clarity of your mind are consistent. You don't get these, you know, highs and lows or dips of energy or brain fog that come over you when you haven't eaten for a while. You just kind of have this constant, predictable level of energy and mental focus. It's a really cool benefit of fasting or ketosis, right? Okay, so once you are doing time-restricted eating and you are getting to know what is working for you, you will notice that it gets easier. Fasting is just like a muscle. It gets stronger as you practice and you exercise it. And when you start seeing those signs of fat adaptation, you know you're on the right track and you know you're ready to take it up a notch if you want to. So here are the typical next fasting regimens that people will play with. The first one is OMAD, one meal a day. That's a 24-hour fast. So you're going from like dinner on Wednesday to dinner on Thursday. That's a 24-hour fast. And we call that OMAD, one meal a day. Now, I don't recommend doing that every day, and I'll talk more about why that is in a little bit. That is a diet that your body can get adjusted to or learn is, you know, like going to be your regular, and your body can adapt to that because the body is incredibly adaptive and it's looking to maintain a balance. So I think OMAD is great every now and then. Some people will call that or even try something called 2MAD, which is just two 24-hour fasts non-consecutively in a week, every week. Okay, so another regimen that is popular is called a 5-2, which is also known as the fast diet. There's a book published years ago called The Fast Diet, and the recommendation in that book is to eat normally for 5 days a week, and then for two non-consecutive days of your choosing, you will restrict down to 500 calories a day for women and a little bit more for men. And that can be from, I don't think he tells you you have to do any certain kind of food, but usually people are trying to make that stretch, right? Like eat bulky food or eat food that is going to be satiating if they're only allowed to consume like 500 calories in a day. I've tried that diet. It was one of my first forays into the fasting world. It was great. So that's another variation. There's also one of my favorites, which I think is maybe the most effective for weight loss in particular, which is ADF, alternate day fasting. So what that looks like is not eating 3 days a week, alternate day. So most people will do, you know, a fast on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And they'll fast through the night. They won't eat anything Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, and then eat either 3 or 2 meals all the other days of the week. This is a super powerful regimen that yields typically faster results than other regimens. There's also a 36-hour, you know, like actually ADF is either 36 or 42-hour alternate day fast, right? But 36 is essentially, you know, you finish dinner on Sunday night, you don't eat on Monday, and you break your fast with breakfast on Tuesday. That's a 36-hour. And then, of course, you can go longer. You can go up to 48, which is just eating maybe dinner on Sunday, not eating on Monday, and breaking your fast Tuesday night at dinner. Okay, so now I want to give you some tips to successfully complete a fast. These are from my own experience and from different sources that I've learned through. So the first one I want to tell you is that if you're ever eating when you're not hungry, I want you to ask yourself why. Check, and that requires that you check in with your body. It requires that you distinguish physical hunger from mind hunger. I'll tell you, last night I was making dinner for my family. It was a wild rice and chicken soup. It was delicious, according to everyone that ate it. And it looked really yummy. And I had a lot of mind hunger. Okay, my brain was like trying to argue and justify why I should just break my fast, why it looks so yummy. It probably tastes amazing. It smells so good. All the things, right, that your brain will tell you because it's wired for survival, to get you to seek the instant gratification and forget your long-term goals. This is just how our brains are wired. So mind hunger is different from physical hunger because the hunger actually begins in the mind. It starts as like a desire. And you start thinking about or touching or smelling the food, and then you start to feel hungry. So I was noticing a lot of chatter in my mind, and I just checked in with my body. Is it really that hungry? Is my body actually sending me true physical hunger signals? And the answer was no. And I was like, why would I break a fast when I'm not even really that hungry? Okay, so that's my first tip for you. The second tip is definitely a practical tip and one I've employed for many, many years to successfully fast. Replace meals with coffee, tea, or bone broth. Okay. And if you want to, you can add a little bit of fat, like some heavy whipping cream or some coconut, full fat coconut cream to your coffee or your tea, just to give it some, you know, just some fat, which is very satiating and tastes good. So it's interesting because the body will recognize that volume, that warmth. And if you add the fat to it, it will recognize that as a meal for many of us and will. This is enough for us to satiate and to check that box that we ate. Okay. And then your brain will move on because what's going on is that you have a hunger hormone called ghrelin that will fire according to what you've taught your body. Your body is innately intelligent. It learns when to expect food. And ghrelin is a hormone that is released that we sometimes call the hunger hormone that happens on at those times of day that your body has been taught to expect food. And so when you answer that signal with some coffee or tea or some bone broth, for many of us, it will cause that hormone to just go down and pass. Okay, now that's interesting because remember, some of you may say, well, I can't have cream in my coffee. Like that wouldn't that break my fast? And I want you to remember the logic is that the control or the switch that flips you from a fasted state into a fed state is when you release insulin. Blood sugar goes up, insulin goes up. Now you have switched from a fasted to a fed state. And fat does not have much capacity at all to raise your sugar or your insulin levels. So it's a little bit of a hack. And this is a great transition into the third tip, which is something that is taught by Jason Fung and Megan Ramos in the fasting method called a fat fast. So she tells, I've heard Megan tell this story before about a client she had who was desperate and could not complete a fast. This was his last resort. He was having some very serious health problems and he was desperate. And he kept breaking his fast and losing control and eating when he was intending to complete a long fast. Because the fasting method sometimes will start people out on like a week-long fast or a 10-day fast. Okay? So a fat fast is really a great way to get your body in fat burning mode before you just relieve your body of food intake, okay? What you're doing is you're consuming only fat. Whenever you're hungry, you just eat fat, natural healthy fats. So this would be things like eggs and bacon. It would be like salmon or sardines. Oils of any kind, like you could drizzle some olive oil and some lemon juice over a bed of spinach or arugula or something. Butter. So you could like saute your spinach in butter, right? And put some salt on it. Avocados, olives. These are all things that are pretty much pure fat. And your body will receive fat and it will taste good and feel and will be satiating, but it will not have much capacity to spike your glucose or your insulin. So it keeps you in this sort of semi-fasted state. And you're only doing this to deal with the hunger. That's what you're doing it for, the physical hunger. And if you do this for a couple of days, many times you can transition into a real fast seamlessly. Because your body will switch from burning the fat that you've been eating to burning the fat off your backside or off your pancreas. Okay, so I don't recommend doing fat fasts, you know, for extended periods of time because your body does have a protein requirement and it is important that you consume protein as a regular dietary macronutrient to just help give your body the building blocks it needs to thrive. Okay, so the fourth tip I want to give you is to switch it up, okay? Don't do the same fast all the time. Remember that alternate day fasting? That's essentially what's going on, is you're confusing your body. So your body is so smart, it will adapt, and it's very good at that. And so you want to keep it guessing. You want to keep it guessing so that it doesn't learn how to weasel its way out of letting go of body fat. Because that's what it'll do. It'll adapt, and then it will hold on to that stored energy and not let you liberate it, not let you burn it for fuel. And so what that looks like is, if you're a person who wants to just do some time-restricted eating, you can switch it up. You can even modify the time of that window, like switch it to morning through 3 p.m. instead of noon through 8 p.m. Whatever you want to do, just try to switch it up and keep your body guessing. So what that looks like for me is I might do a 42-hour and then do a 18-6 on the next day and then do a 24 on the next day and then do another 42. See how that works? You just kind of switch it up. Okay, so now I want to just give you some tips on how to handle hunger, like true physical hunger, when your body is telling you it wants food. If you feel weak, if you feel bad, then I want you to honor your body and feed it, okay? But if none of that is going on and you're just having some hunger pangs, and they're not too bad because you're fat adapted, then I want you to do a couple different things. First, I want you to remember that hunger comes in waves. It will pass. It doesn't just keep building until you are on your knees. That isn't how it works because of that hormone ghrelin that I was talking about. It rises and it falls. If you don't eat, it really will just go away. And do you know what happens when it goes away? Your body is actually just eating its own body fat. It's dining in. And so if you want to, you can talk yourself through this. You can say, hey, I ain't feeding you. Why don't you just grab your belly roll and jiggle it and say, eat this. And that is exactly what it will do. So it's not an emergency. And I want you to really let that sit with you. Hunger is not an emergency. Many of us have been socially conditioned to fear hunger, to have some judgments that hunger is bad, that it's something that needs to be fixed immediately, that it requires urgent intervention. None of this is true. Hunger is just a sensation. It does pass and is not an emergency. So I want you to just ride the wave, okay? And then here's some more tips of how you can experience it and maybe even help it along in its passing. So I wrote a list of 9 things that I will do if I embark, which I'm apparently already on a 5-day fast, and I have true physical hunger. And it happened to me today, just one time, day 2, just one time I got hungry, okay? So the first thing that I did was I drank water. Your body knows that you get a lot of water from food, and it will send hunger signals to you when you need to drink water, when you're getting dehydrated. So drinking water is big. The second thing is that you need to take salt, okay? Especially if you're a person who gets lightheaded or dizzy or headaches, any kind of keto flu symptom, almost all of those things are related to your body not having enough electrolytes. So it's beneficial to regularly take some salt, and you want good quality salt because it contains multiple different electrolytes. So I'm talking about Himalayan sea salt. I have cheapo Himalayan sea salt. I grind it in my coffee or my water, and sometimes I'll just swirl a half a teaspoon in some warm water and just take it down, just shoot it down my gut, and then follow it with some cold, ice cold water. So taking salt will a lot of times alleviate hunger pangs as well, because the body, again, is just wanting to get what it needs. And it thinks that if you eat, you'll get some salt, you'll get some potassium, you'll get some magnesium. And so it's really helpful to integrate and pay attention to your body, and then integrate some salt into your fluids. Okay, so the next thing I have on my list is to read a book. Okay, And I'm talking about something, if you can, that relates to what you're doing. If you can watch a YouTube video or read a book about the immense healing benefits of fasting, it'll help reaffirm you and keep you steadfast in what you're doing and why you're doing it. You can do some light exercise like yoga or stretching or go for a walk. Those are really great ways to distract yourself. And you know what's really interesting is that for many of us, fasting or hunger will be relieved by exercise. It's like the body just stops telling you to eat because now you are exercising and it's not a good time. You can also, call a friend or a family member, you know, just get your mind off of it until it passes, right? It only takes 15 minutes. So call somebody that really makes you laugh, somebody you feel really connected to, and see if you can just get somebody on the phone with you to visit. You can meditate or pray. Those are really great ways to go and to be fully present with your body and just be with it without trying to change it. And for me, meditation has completely changed my life. I love it. Love, love, love meditation. I feel 1,000 times better when I do it regularly. I'm not as crabby, not as, you know, just snappy and impatient and discontent with my life when I'm doing regular meditation. Another hack is apple cider vinegar. You can dilute a tablespoon or two of apple cider vinegar in some water and take that. That sometimes will solve your hunger. You can ask your husband or your wife for a back rub or offer to give one. I like to receive, but that's on my list. And then another one I wrote down is that I want to write down or read why I am doing this. Like, what is the point? What is the commitment I've made and the reason for it? I call this my why. And then if it gets really bad, I can just take some coffee. I can take black coffee or caffeine-free coffee. And if it gets really, really, really bad, I can put some heavy whipping cream in there because I'm trying to take it to the next level. I really want to get better at doing water fasts. Okay, so the last thing that I want to offer as tips to dealing with hunger would be simply to breathe and surrender. This means inviting and welcoming in the discomfort and breathing into it. Okay, most of us want to clench up and clamp up and resist on any kind of discomfort. Notice your tendency to do that. And relax. Relax by breathing into your belly, taking deep, full breaths and holding it at the apex for just a couple seconds. And then take another breath. And just lean into it. And you can even say a prayer. I've been doing this more lately and it's incredibly helpful. I don't know why I took so long to try this out because it works, which is to just ask God or whoever you believe in is your higher power for some help in getting through that moment that it's feeling really hard. Okay. Remember, you get to eat later. Okay. There's always a time to feast. And feasting is very important. But right now, we're fasting. Okay. And then the last thing I want to give you as a way to successfully complete fast is to focus your mind on what you love about fasting. And I'm going to tell you some of mine. I love the energy that I get. I just have so much freaking energy. Like, I can't even sleep sometimes because I have too much energy. I can clean my whole house. I can do all these different things. And you know why else I can do them? Not just because I have so much energy, but because I don't have to deal with feeding myself. The simplification of my life while I'm fasting is incredible. Not only do I not need to take the time and the effort to prepare and eat meals, but it shuts down all that drama in my mind about food. What am I going to eat? When am I going to eat? You know, do I need to prepare something? Is it really that nutritious? Maybe I should try something else. What do I have in the house? Everybody else isn't going to like it. Just all that stuff, all the drama that goes on in the mind around food, it can almost feel like an obsession. It takes up so much space in your mind. And so when you just decide you're not eating, it disappears. You get back so much headspace simply by making the one decision to not eat for a period of time. And I love that. I love, love, love that. I love feeling light and lean in my body. I love that tight, you know, not the bloated, fluffy feeling in my abdomen when I'm getting dressed. Like, I love it when I'm still like so lean at night and I'm just lean throughout the day and I'm feeling light on my feet. It's just a great feeling. I love it. All right. So those are the things oh my goodness, this is a really long podcast and I hope it is packed for you with awesome tips. You can always like put it on pause, right? And come back to it later. But I believe that this podcast is worth every minute because it is all about how to actually do something that literally has the potential to heal you from type 2 diabetes. And that's how much I love you. So if this feels daunting to you, if it feels difficult for you, or just sometimes impossible for you, I want you to remember that you can come work with me. I can guide you through this process for you. And giving yourself this kind of an advantage is a game changer because you actually get where you want to go. You get there faster and with so much less suffering. If you're interested in working with me, you can reach me at sarahtownley.com and you can find that linked in the show notes. Just reach out to me. And if it looks like you're a good fit, I will offer you a spot to coach with me one-on-one. That's 16 weeks to reversing your type 2 diabetes and you deserve it. Okay, I will see you on the next episode. High five for tuning in with me today. You are getting smarter and stronger when you show up for yourself this way. You can get more free tools to help you control type 2 diabetes on my website, sarahtownley.com. And if you're serious about ending your struggle with diabetes, join my membership, The Diabetes Revolution, where you work with me in a community of people just like you. See you on the next episode.